How to Lie with Statistics by Daryl Huff.
We'll be talking about this book, and I'm Sophia Henninger.
Chris Vaccaro.
Chelsea Jeanette Smith.
Diana M.
This book uses real-life examples to try and explain the actual mathematical techniques and theories behind the statistics we use every day.
But through lies,
as, I don't know, sometimes they use statistics a lot. And that's what we learned from this book. And now, a little more about what we thought of it.
Okay, so when we first started reading off this book, we thought that it would be more about a story than just random situations that involve statistics. And we also thought it would be more of, we thought it would be like Moneyball, the movie. We also thought that it would pull us in within the first two chapters and that it wouldn't start off as slow as it did.
And it took a while for us to get connected into the book. Like, honestly, I'm into like the fourth chapter and I'm not even digging it. Like, how you feel? How y'all feel? Yeah, how y'all feel?
I mean, like, for what the book is, it's a book about math. It's not bad. Like, I mean, honestly, how could they come up with a story that really gets us into the whole math thing without, I mean, like, with still teaching us something? And for what it was okay. So what is statistics?
Okay, so I'll start it off. To me, I thought statistics was more about probability and percentages and looking at something and telling how good or how ineffective or effective something can be just by the numbers.
To me, statistics is different aspects of data through experiments or surveys. Or like when, for example, like when football players got like different stats on how many catches they got or how many touchdowns they have or how many drops they have.
My definition of stats is like percentage, like because, all right, I play basketball, so if I score like 20 points and like 5 assists, I would want to know like my percentage, like how many shots I made or missed. So I think it's like that, like the actual stats, I guess, percentage.
And my definition of statistics is just numbers that people try and use to define people as a whole or like certain situations. Like it's just numbers that are supposed to give a meaning to something else.
And after hearing all the different types of definitions, the actual definition that comes from the dictionary is statistics is the study of the collection, organization, analysis, interpretation, and presentation of data. So the next thing that we're going to talk about is the different ways that we use statistics. And I know that ways we can use statistics is like for doctors, they're trying to see the probability that someone will make it or won't make it. Or
we also use statistics in sports. And yeah.
How?
That's it.
How
by using like the percentage of, like I said earlier, like if I wanted to know how many shots I made, how many I missed, I would just calculate the percentage, and that's using statistics.
I also think of it as like finding the mean, the mode, the maximum, the minimum, and the range. I think that has a big deal with stats.
The only way I can think of how I've used stats is just like when I think about like during voting. Because they're always trying to look at the different demographics and who's going to vote for who. And I think, like, all the percentages they use is, like, say, all the racial categories. Oh, all the Latinos are going to vote for this guy, or all the blacks are going to vote for this guy. Like, it's just, I don't know, that's how I see it being used most often.
Okay, so I'll start it off. Okay, so we read chapters 3 and 4 and started going through chapter 5 a little bit. And what I noticed that was most interesting in chapter... What I noticed that was most interesting in chapter 3 was how they talked about families and the average housing for an American family. And it says that fits 3.6 persons. So what that really means is that it fits between 3 and 4 people in a house. And within that house, there's 2 bedrooms and then the type of people that live in that house are minorities. And what they also seem to have left out is just the, they left out how the difference between a big family versus a small family and things like that. So I just wanted to get everybody's opinion on that.
Mm. I mean, like this study just, and like what you said about it shows something that they do in almost every poll they take. No matter how broad they try and make the spectrum of people they include, they're always going to leave out a certain group. Like you said that for the type of people who live in those homes tend to be minorities. So in another poll, they might leave out, you know, people who work during the day and or people who drive to work and stuff like that. So just every poll is different, and there's no way to get a consensus of every single type of person.
I wouldn't exactly say it for that it's all American families, because I'm pretty sure there's people with three bedroom houses or four bedroom houses. Nowadays, that's what they usually make. And back in the day, they settled for the two bedroom.
Yeah, I think it depends on the family situation. Like, if they don't have that much money to buy a big house for their family, then of course they want to go with a one-bedroom or two-bedroom apartment. In chapter 3, it talks about how a child at a certain age should know how to sit up straight. And they say if the child doesn't know how to sit up straight,
They tend to think that he retarded, and I don't think that's true.
It talks about how they're looking at parents who are reading books and how they think at a certain age their child should be at this point in their life and how a certain age they should be there. And then it also talks about how it's something called the gestational norms, and it just says that it produces pain and the moms and dads, because they have the mothers and fathers thinking that their children need to be at a certain point at a certain time. They're not, and they're mentally stable, or something's wrong with them, or they have or they're just subnormal, or anything can go wrong with it.
See, the way I think of it as people are gonna take their time out to grow. Like, not everybody's gonna get facial hair at the same time, you know? Like, right, it's right. Gonna take time. Like, people are gonna grow on their own time when they feel the need to grow, when they're capable of growing, when they have the room to grow.
Like Chris is saying, they should be able to grow at their own speed. It shouldn't matter. The statistics shouldn't matter, or when a book says that a child should be at a certain point, because every child is different. That's up to the child to choose and when they're ready to be at that point.
And so now we're looking at page 50 in the book. And right here they're talking about how sometimes companies or advertising campaigns use graphs. And when people see graphs, usually they think, you know, this is facts, this is numbers. But a lot of times these advertising campaigns just use this and use the way people think of them to mislead. So in a lot of these it says, you know, the value of this product will just keep on going and just keep rising, or that this energy release will be so much more efficient than, you know, the version before it. And if you actually sat there and looked at the numbers and looked at everything, it's a complete lie.
Basically, for instance, a way to allow statistics is to have data on a graph look the same, but one can be larger than the other with no labels or numbers, but it can be the exact same thing.
Yeah, go ahead. Oh, yeah, like Chris was saying, because in the book it has a picture of of two graphs, and they're going at this. It looks like they're going at the same slope, but in reality, the way that they drawn it out is what's messed up. So it's saying that it takes 1 minute to get somewhere, but it's actually taking 1 minute to get from the same thing in both graphs. So on page 72, we were looking at the Crescent Cow, and it was talking about how in 1860 there were about 8 million cows in the United States, and then by 1936, there were more than 25 million. But with the picture shown, it shows a cow in 1860 that was real small, and then in 1936, a cow that's about three times bigger than the cow in 1860. And with this, they have, this can be misleading because it's to, people may read this as though cows now, well, cows in 1963 were bigger than cows in 1860.
But then again, that doesn't exactly mean anything because you could see it from a different point of view, whether you're far away or whether you're up close. I'm pretty sure cows are around the same same amount of weight, same amount of height.
That they were back then?
Yeah. Like, what changed? Unless it's like a baby compared to a human. I mean, not compared to a human, compared to an adult.
I mean, honestly, like, if you just look at it, that whole thing is misleading. Like, why don't, if it's a quantity thing, why are they making size look like it's the thing that's changed? It just seems to me, to begin with, like, kind of stupid. Like, why don't you just at least have a graph or something that shows how the population is different instead of misleading people into thinking the size is different? We just started talking about this,
what part? Seven.
Chapter 7.
Which is the semi-attached figure. And they're talking about how, well, what type of germs causes colds and what they can do about it.
Just the germs that, do colds?
Mm-hmm. Alright, yeah, back to the cold thing. They went from talking about colds to talking about black people.
And then talking about guns. And then talking about cigarette smokers. How are you gonna do that? Like, you confusing me.
Yeah, did they really connect it in any way?
It's really confusing. No.
The only way I think you can connect it is through statistics. You know that? Because,
They did kind of connect it, though. They was trying to say they wanted to do a poll on what type of germs cause colds. And then they were talking about how in the polls, some people were being prejudiced.
And you can name, like, the percentage of people.
Do you think that happens with polls all the time, that there's prejudice in them?
Yeah, I would think so.
Like, they wonder who will vote more. Would it be the black people?
For Obama.
Or the Caucasian.
Right, there you go. That's a perfect example.
They thought most black people would vote for Obama. I knew some black people that didn't even vote for Obama.
Exactly, so. Me too. But that's so stereotypical. Like, I don't like that.
Yeah, so back to the book.
And then you said it jumped from what from what to
now smoke? They're starting to talk about then they started talking about cigarette smoking. Yeah, like I'm looking at the same thing.
And then it jumps from cigarette smokers to car accidents.
Talk about your car accident.
It says how you can use accident statistics to scare yourself to death. And I'm like, what is going on? So I read a little bit more, right? And then it talked about how and compared to the present time, there were more people were killed in airplanes than they were in 1910. So they're trying to say that airplanes are more dangerous now than they were back then, which is crazy. But then the book is saying that that is just all nonsense.
Oh, well, yeah. Because today so many more people use airplanes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't even make sense.
And then it was saying how in steam railroads, in one recent year, there was 4,712 deaths.
That's about the end of chapter 7. So in chapter 8, in post hoc rods again, they are talking about whether cigarette smokers make lower college grades than non-smokers. They said it turned out that they did. I don't really believe it, though.
Well, look, I believe that if you just put your head to anything you do, you can
succeed. Yeah, I don't think it's
succeed.
Bad about their smoke cigarettes
yeah,
or not.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Just targeted, like, a certain type of group that smoke.
It's a stereotype.
I think this comes back to, like, how, you know, polls and statistics, like, it doesn't always tell you the truth. Like, there's no way to get, you know, the sense of it from an entire group of people without there being any type of lying or prejudice or anything you just missed. It's just impossible.
And they saying smoking makes dual minds. I'm just like,
Wait, smoking what? What
are you
talking about?
Smoking cigarettes.
Not weed.
Not weed.
Y'all tripping.
Well, like, that's not true.
Right. Sophie.
Ooh.
Crazy.
Yeah. I don't think that's...
And then they go to, like, talking about medical statistics and stuff like that, where they're looking at, like, cause and effect on nature of, like, a matter of speculations. And it says it's a real statistical fact that someone has... it is a real statistical fact that there is a close relationship between the salaries of Presbyterian ministers in Massachusetts and the price of rum and Havana.
You said what?
Havana. Ha 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 ha.
What are you saying, Chauncey? All right, so then after Chris was just on page 90, when you look at page 94, it switched it up and was talking about like the true and false, popular notions, true or false. So it says, what effect does going to college have on your chances of remaining unmarried? If you're a woman, it skyrockets your chances. Yeah. The answer is, if you're a woman, it skyrockets your chances of becoming an old maid. But if you're a man, it has the opposite effect. It minimizes your chances of staying a bachelor. And then it talks about how Cornell University made a study of 1,500 typical middle-aged college students. Of the men, 93% college graduates, you're right. Of the men, 93% were married, compared to 83% for the general population. But of the middle-aged women graduates, only 65% were unmarried. Spinsters were relatively three times as numerous among college graduates as among women of the general population.
Quote unquote.
Yeah. And I'm just thinking about that, like, so are they basically saying that since a woman has an education, now her chances of getting married are slim to none, pretty much?
Basically, I'm reading right here. So
I just don't.
Because most of the time, you got these housewives up here that don't do nothing, that don't go to work. So they're not really expecting
that booty,
like,
what you mean?
That don't go to work, so they're just expecting them to, like, you know, be housewives, do dishes, clean a house. Not have to do anything.
I don't get it. Like, I'm stuck right here. Like, I would think that the girl that goes to college and gets her degree would be more likely
to get married
and have a man.
I think they're looking at it like, oh, a man sees a woman that's being successful and she's making more money than him. He's like, no, I don't want that.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. But, like, I'm wondering what they're trying to prove.
That's all pride. That's too, I don't like that. That's like, all pride. That's all man
that's
pride.
That's just weird, like, how they're going to say that it doesn't make sense.
That's
pride. As a whole. That's weird. Keep it going.
And then
they start digging into like cancer and stuff around like
next page.
New England, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Switzerland, where a lot of the milk is produced and consumed.
They were saying that English woman was living an average of 12 years longer than Japanese woman.
Are you saying water?
That's what I'm saying. Oh, yeah, they were saying with cancer.
So they're saying, wait, you said British
They're saying
women,
that English women live longer than Japanese.
That have cancer?
That have cancer, yeah.
By 12 years, that's
crazy. By 12 years.
Do they say what backs it up? Yeah, like why they're living longer.
I think I was just...
Didn't I just read something about the milk, was it?
Yeah, I think that's what it has to do with, because I was just reading the same thing, and it said milk. And she was like, milk? Milk.
This is what's confusing me about the statistics. Like, yeah, I know this number is about how... I mean, this book is about how the numbers lie to you, but, like, some of the stuff they're bringing up, I don't understand why they don't talk about the science behind it, like, why...
Right.
That's making the difference, or like why that makes the statistic more likely to be true or false.
Yeah, and it's like the little things they point out, like going back to this milk thing, it says also it was pointed out milk drinking English women get some kinds of cancer 18 times as frequently as Japanese women who seldom drink milk. So they're just
That's weird.
Are you saying that milk causes cancer?
That's what I'm getting from it.
That's what I'm getting from it. That's exactly what I'm getting from it.
I love milk. Don't do that.
I love milk too.
That's what I took from it. That doesn't make sense to me either.
It's strange. It's like...
They say it's a good thing too.
Wait, what?
Milk is supposed to help your teeth. I don't get it.
They make all these commercials about how people should drink milk, and they gonna say this. All these commercials.
Yeah, help your bones, but you'll still get cancer.
You just can't win.
I think
and
it's
then,
weird.
What does it have to do with English women and Japanese women?
Right.
Yeah. What about them? See, they looking at these specific group of people in this book. Like, they don't look at a whole. They look at specific.
It's not like a random type thing where they just took a whole bunch from different races and stuff like that. Compare it. What about all the other countries and people? What does that mean for, you know?
And their diets. Like, it's weird.
Right. All the other races. What's their chances of getting cancer compared to everybody else?
With the last two chapters, chapter 9 and chapter 10. Ooh. Almost done. Yes. The start of chapter 9 is really confusing. Like, I've had to read it like at least 5 times, but I didn't know what I was reading.
I feel the same way. Yeah. I was looking over,
I was trying to write down notes for it. I couldn't even do it, Mr. Moss.
Yeah. I was like, it starts off with like testiculation. And I kind of took that as like another way of saying statistics. For real, for real. It's just like a method that, deals with data and surveys.
Chelsea.
Right here it says misinforming people by the use of statistical material might be called statistical manipulation, in a word, though not a very good one, staticulation.
Right.
I guess it's saying that.
Isn't that what the whole book's about? How to lie with statistics?
That is.
How to manipulate people with statistics.
Exactly.
Basically.
There you go.
I mean, I guess No,
you're right.
Yeah.
Making one believe that something is not exactly what it is, but from a distance it is what they say it is.
Alright. And then, that was the beginning of chapter 9. And when you dig a little deeper into chapter 9, page 104, they start talking about back to family income and stuff like that, and how the average income of a family was $3,100. And then, yeah. But I'm thinking...
But in what year was that? Because
this was in 1949. That's what the Bureau of the Census was saying.
An average income meaning like a month?
I don't know if that's a month or if that's for the year, but then again, that is 1949.
Yeah, so it might be.
That's weird, you know.
A year.
It's not saying. And then,
I think it is for the
year.
$3,100. I'll make that in a month.
And then what was it saying? It was talking about, it has like a little picture on how to make $22,500 a year for gross income when you have at least one wife and 13 children.
Oh,
right.
And then, you calculate. Yeah, this one confused me a little bit.
That's weird.
Calculate the U.S. per capita income.
So that's about $1,500 per year, approximately.
Per year, approximately.
Multiplied by 15, and that's how you get it. And that's one. And then it was saying, on the next page, it was saying how people that have 4 children. This is confusing too.
Now I have 4 children, and I wish things were disposed in that way, but they're not. Families of 4 are by no means commonly twice as wealthy as families of 2.
Oh, okay. So they are saying that the family of 2 doesn't matter, or family of 4, they could both be equally wealthy. It doesn't matter whether, it matters on the family, so I should say.
I think, like, families of 4, they say is twice as wealthy than families of 2. Well, you figure it's still going to be the same for each person. Say, like, this person gets a certain amount of money, and then, say, like, all right, for instance, us 4. I will get a certain amount of money, she would get a certain amount of money, you would get a certain amount of money, she would get a certain amount of money. They will all get the same amount of money. And that will be the same amount as the two people and the one family that would get. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? It'll be basically the same thing.
And then we start talking about how people we start talking about the amount of hours someone gets at night. The amount of sleep someone gets at night. Yeah. And how they said that each night a person can go 5 minutes, will wake up for 5 minutes and was it 5 or 15 minutes? I think it was 5.
I think it was 15.
Yeah, 5. Well, a person can recall at least 5 minutes of sleepless, of, like, not being asleep in the middle of the night. But on average, a person will get 7.831, which, or 7.8, almost 8 hours of sleep a night. I think that's pretty true. Unless, you know, they go to bed.
Do you think that's
late.
Just for a woman? Because I see right here it says labor and rest for a peasant woman, of a peasant woman. Like, in 1923... producing labor, it was like 7 hours and 49 minutes. Other labor would be like 8 hours and 2 minutes. And then the rest would be 2 hours and 26 minutes. And then the sleep would be 5 hours and 43 minutes. So, wait, what I'm getting from this is rest meaning like falling asleep, but not exactly asleep yet?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Like,
Well, then in 1936... they have 4 hours and 43 minutes for producing labor, 6 hours and 50 minutes for other labor, 5 hours and 1 minute for rest, and then 7 hours and 26 minutes for sleep. So what I'm getting from 1936 is that it's like 13 hours of rest sleep. And that doesn't make no sense, honestly.
Why do you think it doesn't make sense?
Because that's like half your day. Like half your day, you're asleep. You're falling asleep. Going to sleep.
Well, yeah, true.
You see what I mean?
I mean, do they mean like when you're actually trying to lay down and go to sleep? Or just like, you know, when I'm on the bus ride home and I'm like, I don't got anything to do. It's quiet. I'm about to fall asleep.
I think it's that. I think they're counting.
And that's
like,
resting.
All the time you're trying to rest.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, like 13 hours a day or just where you're like in your bed trying to sleep, that is a lot of time.
Yeah.
But just think, you know, all the time during the day where you're just sitting there not doing anything.
By producing labor, they're meaning like working and stuff?
This has to do with statistics, but it's not in the book. But they say you're supposed to get at least 8 hours of sleep.
Yeah,
they say that should be enough, but that's not enough. I'll be getting like 10 hours of sleep and I still be tired.
Do you want to know why you still be tired? No, look.
Why I still be tired?
An average athletic person is supposed to get 7 to 8 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you get more than 8 hours of sleep, you'll be tired. If you get less than 7 hours of sleep, you'll be tired.
Yeah. You want to reach that mark. Like, you know, like,
you want to be on time with your sleep. Yeah.
Like, let's say if you, let's say, like, the night before you sleep at all, you try to sleep the whole day. You know, when you wake up, like, you try to sleep.
You're still
tired. But look,
I stayed up. One night, I stayed up doing a benchmark all night. Like, I ain't getting no sleep at all. And I wasn't even that tired in school. Like, I just crashed.
You crashed hard.
Like, I woke up like, oh, snap. I didn't even know I went to sleep. Like,
yeah,
I'm
exactly.
Like, what day is it? Like, I didn't know I went to sleep. So it's weird. Because they say you need at least 8 hours of sleep. They, but they say it for everybody. You need at least 8 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
You
I mean, when sleep. I was taking the driver permit test, that on the test it said, said you need at least 8 hours of sleep before driving.
Right. Yeah. Because not you don't drive, you can get highway high.
Oh, yeah, that's another statistic.
It's just like when they tell you when you take drugs, like, don't operate heavy machinery.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, drugs can give you the same effect of not sleeping for 2 days. Like,
yeah, they said that with alcohol.
It just messes you up.
And for driving, right, they say it's the same amount. Driving under the influence and being sleepy. They say your reactions is slower than
then that's
sleeping.
How you get in car accidents.
Yeah, they say that's another statistic.
And then you start moving in slow motion.
Just as like a quick question to everyone, like, how many times, like, not word for word, but how many times do you think, like, in your day or I don't know, like in your week, do statistics Like, do you think of it, or does it matter to you? Like,
the only time I think about statistics is when I'm in school. Think about what work I gotta do.
Same, but I just started thinking about that though with sleeping and driving and I never really thought about it like that ever.
I mean, so. I think you use it no matter what without even realizing it. You know how to say math is around you all the time.
Yeah. I did not believe
that. It is, though.
Like, I really didn't. I didn't want to believe it.
Why? Because it's schoolwork.
I don't want to believe it.
Like, we really do need math.
And, like, I didn't realize how much. I thought. Yeah, like we said in the first few podcasts, how we thought statistics were just percentiles and like it had to do with sports, but it turns out it's a lot more. Like you just said, it's with sleeping and it's.
Yes, Mr. Miles, this relates to chapter 10 because it tells us how to talk back to a statistic, and we're
talking back to the statistic.
Yes.
So,
go ahead,
what
were
you saying, Chelsea?
Just
like
you
were saying,
late.
Yeah, chapter 10.
How to talk back to a statistic? Yeah. Not all statistical information that you may come up on can be tested with the sureness of chemical analysis or of what goes on in an assayer's laboratory. An assayer meaning like a teacher or something?
Yeah. But in chapter 10, it don't really say really too much in the last chapter.
It's talking about
It's talking about stockholders. And being biased.
So basically, they're answering questions for us. Like,
Doesn't make sense. That stuff makes sense.
So overall, it was a good book. It was confusing at times.
But it was confusing at times. It's a good book. What did you think about the book, Chelsea?
I think, like, well, for a math book, you know, it wasn't that bad. It's just, like, if they would clear it up a little bit more.
I agree. I like the book.
Yeah.
It was. It started off very slow. Very slow,
Mr. Miles.
You just tell me.
I would recommend a different book, Mr. Miles. Sorry,
Moneyball was a book. Though. I would have read that.
Moneyball was a book. We would have read it. We need to try to find a book like that.
I guess that's it, Mr. Miles.
Good job, y'all.
Yay!
Yay! Book club.
All right.
More of this. We're all done.
Goodbye.